PSU?
So I'm not directly involved in that project. What I understand is that the what I can say as a small entrepreneurial company, the cost of the facility has to be affordable. So we have been running on a very small round of angel investment funding and federal small business grants, which carry just a modest amount of funds for overhead. We have been extremely frugal, and we have stretched those dollars quite far. We've been able to do that in part because the facility that we've had the opportunity to lease has been very affordable. I had heard, I don't know the figures, but I had heard that the proposal for development of facilities in that district wasn't going to pencil out for companies like us. So I think that that is an important issue, the affordability of these kinds of things for your young startups, your entrepreneurial companies that are trying to get a leg and yet need more expensive facilities like a wet lab. There are a lot of companies that don't need a facility that's that expensive, and they can be well served in other sorts of situations. But so that, I think cost of the facility.
Your time, I appreciate that.
And we got to move things along. But the fact that the affordable labs at PSU do indeed have a long waiting list is testament to at least a piece of why I believe the URA is important. And the URA gives us, along with getting other federal and foundation grants, is how we cobble together the resources to create affordable wet lab space and other kinds of business incubator space. So the money that Brian Newman, former Metro Councilor, now with OHSU.
I've lost all credibility now. Thanks, Sam.
Call you a lawyer.
I know. So the aspect that we haven't highlighted yet is the fact, but in addition to whatever you had prepared to comment on, is a lot of the money that universities go for require local matches.
That's right.
And whether it's you know, NIH or what have you, you've got to come up, you've got to show them you've got some local matches. So I know that there have been a number of projects with OHSU where local matches have, where URA funds have sort of unlocked other funding. And I just wanted you to touch on that.
Sure. And so I'll put my comments aside for a second and help answer that as well as Commissioner Fritz's question. Brian Newman with Oregon Health and Science University. It's a pleasure to be here. As you know, Commissioner Fritz and Mayor Adams, Commissioner Fish, over the last 5 years, really, 6 years, really, OHSU has invested $400 million in South Waterfront. That's not even including land acquisition or the Oregon University System's investments. Much of that for research facilities. One tangible benefit is recruiting entire research labs, not individuals, but entire research labs from places like the Bay Area, where we brought them here to brand new facilities where they can continue their research. And these are highly productive of researchers coming here, but they're OHSU employees. What has been a more difficult nut to crack is really these startups, which by their very nature have a very thin operating margin, dependent on their research grants, but I don't think anyone fully understood as well as they could have the challenge, not just with the capital, but the ongoing operating costs and the subsidy required to keep them in certain spaces. Now, we have probably a dozen high-tech or bioscience startups as tenants in our various spaces. What we've had a hard time accomplishing is getting them in brand new built space that costs hundreds of dollars per square foot to build. That's really been the challenge for South Waterfront, not so much for our sponsored research and our scientists, but for these startups that are often started up by those same researchers, but they're under a private enterprise. To your point, Sam, the match between aligning the PDC investments and the city investments along with our facility investments has been really the success story of South Waterfront. It has allowed us the partnership with TriMet on the new station in front of the CLSB, the Collaborative Life Sciences Building, is a perfect example, where we were able to use some of that match as part of what we needed with the state to be able to get the state G-bonds for that facility. So, you know, all of these things go hand in hand, and the success story really has been the synergy between the PDC investments, the city investments, and our own facility plans, where when you said, you know, we want to make sure when that tram operates on the first day that there's a building there, 4 months before you opened the tram, we opened the Center for Health and Healing. TriMet said before we open the light rail, we want to make sure that there's a, when the door opens, there's a building there. We're going to have our building up and operating a year and a half before that light rail line operates. And so it's, we're all locked in rooms together all the time talking about how we can align our various investments and our strategies. And I think what we've done in South Waterfront is success. There's still a lot to be done. And I hopefully that will be a model that we can follow with this new urban renewal district as well. Now, that I kind of went into some of my comments. Do you want me to just go finish a few other things I was planning on saying? I want to make sure I answered Commissioner Fritz's question. Okay. Well, on behalf of OHSU and behalf of President Robertson, who unfortunately is not able to be here, we're enthusiastic supporters of this new urban renewal area for PSU and for the city. You know, as I've already alluded to, OHSU and PSU are growing closer together every day. Physically, because of the investments that this city and this region have made in light rail and streetcar and bike and pedestrian facilities and new streets, but programmatically, President Vival has already mentioned the new School of Public Health that our faculty are deeply in conversations with together about forming over the next couple of years. We are hopeful that that's going to be a new school that will find a home on the Schnitzer campus. Also, joint employment. We have support service staff that are now have half-time and jobs at PSU and half-time on the Hill that are serving that same function, but allowing those efficiencies to support both institutions. And then, of course, the Collaborative Life Sciences building, where we have tens of thousands of square feet of shared education space and research space that we're very proud and will be opening up real soon. So that's just an example of our ongoing partnership, our strategic partnership in higher ed, as well as research with Portland State. What we're hoping will be the hallmark of our involvement here with this urban renewal district is furthering those research goals and commercialization, to your point. We have two properties in the district. They were purchased 10 years ago. Excuse me, they were purchased decades ago for back office support service functions. They have a lot of deferred maintenance. We're hoping to redevelop those sites for taxable uses just for the kinds of startups you're talking about. We already have four companies that are tenants in those buildings, four bioscience startups from our own faculty. We can see those becoming homes to many more along the same lines as been mentioned by the previous testimony, as well as what you see at the PSU bio the accelerator that's operating off of Southwest Corbett. So we think this ongoing partnership is extremely important. There's no other school in the state or in the world that produces more future OHSU students than Portland State University. So our success is completely tied to the future success of Portland State, and we're very proud to stand with them in support of this urban renewal area. And thank you for your leadership and the leadership of the staff to be able to bring this forward. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Jody, and I always get Jody's second name wrong. Getzlow Parker, is that all right? Josh Blank, Lauren Gannon, Sam Pardue. Would you like to go first, Jody?
Absolutely, absolutely. My name is Jody Getzlow Parker. I'm with Columbia Pacific Building Trades. I'm going to read you this little blurb and then talk from my heart. So on behalf of Columbia Pacific Building Trades, we urge City Council's support of the Education Urban Renewal Plan. We think it's a bold expansion of the Portland State University and the partnerships with the Portland Public Schools to reinvest in their 11-acre site at Goose Hollow. With the prospect of the new counting buildings creates great opportunities for steady works and jobs in the building trades. Our unemployment rate has dropped from its peak of about, and this is a rough number, 40% from a few years ago. Tough years, we all know that. We still have a long way to go. We look forward to getting families back into their earning capacities with steady jobs all year round. Sorry about that. Beyond this, the focus of the URA and the intent to help grow PSU into a world-class research university can't help but benefit the entire region. I appreciate your time. Now, from my heart, I've got 2 minutes, a little less. I had the occasion yesterday to attend a conference from the Portland Workforce Investment. And I might have the name wrong, but what it was community business leaders, elected officials, everybody coming together to be supportive of high school people to teach them about the opportunities for careers. And I'll tell you what, a lot of things struck me. Some of the students got up and spoke, but the biggest thing was, as far as this piece right here, is a gentleman stood up and talked about shadowing up at, I think, OHSU, and wanting to help find a cure for cancer. Now, to me, that means, we got some motivated kids out there wanting to learn. I'd like to see them be able to stay here in the area and grow with this opportunity. I know some people that have benefited from degrees out of Portland State University. One is doing great work with the Bonneville Power Association. One is a teacher. We do good things in Portland. Let's keep it up. So thank you for your time. Thank you for listening. Thank you
very much. Josh.
My name is Josh Blank. I'm one of the co-founders of Open Sesame. Open Sesame is a startup in the online education space, specifically focused on adult education and professional training. We're located in the Portland State University Business Accelerator, and we'd like to urge you to support this urban renewal district. Our relationship with Portland State has been great for our business. We started out a little over a year and a half ago, and now have hired, we're at about 15 people, with almost all of them working in Portland at the Portland State University Business Accelerator. We've benefited tremendously from having access to interns, a master's team that helped us do a great market analysis early on in our business. And these types of activities were really crucial in the formation of our business. So we believe that entrepreneurs can really benefit from a relationship with an educational institution like Portland State. And so for that reason, we urge you to support this.
Thanks, sir. Hi, Lauren?
Yes.
All right.
Hi, I'm Lauren Gannon. I am speaking. I'm actually going to read you guys a letter from our CEO from American Campus Communities. I'm the local representative that will be the property manager for the new University Point building currently under construction.
Looking good, by the way.
Thank you. So Bill says, I'm writing in support of the proposed education urban renewal area around the Portland State University campus. As one of the nation's largest developers and operators of student housing, American Campus Communities has many options about where and how to build out our real estate portfolio. We recently made a significant investment in student housing at Portland State University because we can see this institution's growing excellence and long-term potential to become a world-class urban university. With the help of Portland firms Walsh Construction and Sarah Architects, we are proud to say that we will open a $90 million, 980-bed project this fall. This will be a significant expansion of the housing available on campus and will create a more vibrant urban campus neighborhood for the city. Our investment has created jobs and indirect economic activity for Portland, and this taxable development will soon be provided needed housing, active retail, and new transit stations for Portland State University. We have really enjoyed the opportunity to become part of the Portland community, and we have been impressed by the partnerships we have seen between the city and the university. We strongly urge you to approve the URA to create opportunities for more public-private partnerships in the future.
Thank you, and thanks for your investment in Portland. Sam?
Hi, I'm Sam Pardue. I'm the CEO and founder of Indo Windows. Indo Windows is a clean tech manufacturing business with its factory based in North Portland, just a little bit north of Northeast Broadway. We employ about 10 people and expect to double that employment in the next year or so. We manufacture a thermal window insert that's just a sheet of acrylic glazing edged with our patent-pending compression tubing. Just presses into place on the inside of your window to give you double-pane window performance at a fraction of the cost. It's gotten some great national recognition and some national awards. It's a really neat little product. We have benefited from our relationship with Portland State University in several specific ways. First, Portland State University's Green Building Research Laboratory has been our testing partner for establishing the performance claims and really showing how well our product performs in insulating windows and reducing energy consumption. It's an ongoing relationship funded partly by a grant from Oregon Best, but really critical. We're running pilot deployments around the city of Portland right now, funded with this, and it's administered by Portland State University. It's really key to our growth. We've also had an MBA exit program do a national market survey for us, so that was also very helpful. A third involvement or engagement has been with FIR, which is a student-run advertising agency, which is providing us with some testimonial videos and some market research. Finally, we actually expect to be hiring a student intern from Portland State University, which is going to actually help us develop a national, basically a national GIS database of exactly where our target customers reside. It'll help our market expansion. So really pleased to be here testifying in support of this education URA. It sounds like a great idea. In addition to the various specific benefits that businesses get, of course, having an educated citizenry is critical for the functioning of our democracy. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Now turn over the reading of the names to Carla.
We have a total of 15 people signed up. And the first four, please come on up, are Kathleen Hirsch, Elizabeth Brownhill for Steve Novick, Bob Wright, and Kenneth Thrasher.
Welcome. Glad you're here. Who is the first name?
Kathleen Hirsch.
Hi, I'm Kathleen Hirsch. I'm a citizen of Portland. When Portland was granted a charter in 1851, the main reason for organizing a city government was building and maintaining roads. Roads have been a prime responsibility of the city government ever since. So this urban renewal plan should be an embarrassment. One of the justifications it gives for the definition of blight is that 24% of the streets in the urban renewal area are very bad or worse condition. This is an admission of failure by the city government. These are not streets that the city took over 3 or 4 decades ago. These are streets that have been part of the city for over 100 years. They are not far-flung, residential, lightly traveled streets. They are the streets at the core of our city that are very important for the development and economic well-being of our city. You and your predecessors have failed in your responsibility to take care of them. I see no budget in the Urban Renewal District to fix them, but that wouldn't make any difference anyway because you have not budgeted to maintain our streets. That is like buying a car and not planning on changing the oil. The streets will continue to fail. I urge you not to take on any more city debt that for these very nice projects that are frankly not the city's responsibility. I urge you not to give up any tax funding when you cannot find the money to do the fundamental job of maintaining our streets.
And where did you get the information that we haven't budgeted for street maintenance?
From the Oregonian.
Thank you. Hi, welcome.
Hi, good afternoon, Mayor Adams, commissioners. I'm Elizabeth Brownhill, but I'd like today to read a statement written by Steve Novick, who is unable to be here today. Thank you. I appreciate the importance of strengthening PSU, adding more affordable housing, and giving something back to the county and the Portland Public School District, given that they share in the cost of establishing an urban renewal district. I ask, however, that before you cast a final vote on this proposal, you address the following three questions. First, if you had to find several million dollars in this year's general fund budget to help fund these projects, where would you find the money? If you adopt this proposal, you will be reducing city general fund revenues for a number of years in the future. You will be giving future councils less money for police, fire, parks, and other general fund services. I respectfully suggest that you should not assume that future councils will be able to do less with general fund money unless you yourselves can envision cutting this year's general fund to fund these projects. Secondly, would it be possible, and if so, would it be preferable for the city to simply commit $50 million of its own funds to PSU rather than creating an urban renewal area to generate $169 million, of which PSU will receive less than a third? The driving force behind this proposal is the desire to help PSU, but the proposal winds up taking about $60 million apiece from the city, county, and the state school fund while giving PSU only $50 million. I understand that if you are going to use the urban renewal tool, the housing set aside and some help for the county and Portland Public Schools makes sense. But I am curious, is there any way that the city, rather than using the urban renewal process, could simply arrange to transfer $50 million of its own funds to PSU? And thirdly, how exactly will PDC's $24 million share of the pot be spent? I note that the proposal allocates to PDC itself an amount equal to almost half of PSU's share of the total. I recognize that PDC will be assisting PSU, the housing projects, and the school district in carrying out their projects, but $24 million is a lot of money. Again, this $24 million is in effect diverted from the city and county general fund and the state school fund and should be carefully justified. Thank you for your consideration, and please note that I've submitted longer testimony in writing.
Well, thank the candidate for, sorry, couldn't be here himself. I'll spare you my questions in reply.
I can take them to him, but
I will spare you my questions in reply. Sir.
Yeah, Mayor Adams, Commissioner Fritz, Commissioner Fish, thank you for the opportunity to speak before you today. I'm Bob Wright, a Portland native and a six-year resident of the West End. Oregon tax law and the economy are severely impacting the statewide funding of public schools. In districts serving people with the least financial resources, the impact is critical. The Education Urban Renewal Area Plan does forecast a dynamic public-private business partnership involving the expansion of Portland State University. However, if approved, it will also divert millions of property tax dollars over a 32-year period from funds that finance our public school statewide. Unless there is a change in Oregon tax laws and the economy, the two factors that are negatively affecting the statewide funding of public schools, the outlook is indeed grim. If this EDURA plan is approved, tax increment finances over 37 square blocks of downtown Portland will have been denied to county and state taxing authorities for 59 years. I repeat, 59 years. This disturbing fact is absolutely contrary to the basic intent of Oregon's urban renewal statute. The EDUR plan must be delayed until a sane revenue system is firmly in place to fund K through 12 public education. However, at a minimum, a balanced, easily understood public accounting about which county and state funds will be impacted and by how much is mandatory before a city council vote can be taken. The impact on public school districts across the state must be made known to counties from Malheur to Clatsop. The school districts serving the parents and students with the least economic resources will suffer the most. Despite education being in its name, this urban renewal plan puts educational equity at risk across the state. Children must live with the education we provide or deny now. Thank you.
Are you familiar with how much we subsidize the rest of the state in our school-based property taxes?
It has not been revealed in the public outreach of this plan. That's what we were looking for and have not received that.
No, this is what Measure 5 did back in the 90s, 92, 93. It takes Portland public school tax dollars and, among other things, spreads it across districts around the state to get equalization. Mm-hmm. Encourage you to dig into that and happy to follow up with you to provide you with some of those details and to Mr. Novick as well, embedded in one of his questions. Mr. Thrasher.
Mayor Adams, Commissioners Fritz and Fish. Kenneth Thrasher, a business person, Cradle to Career Council member, PSU Foundation board member, and along with my wife, a major donor to Portland State. I think that this decision to perform this urban renewal district is a strategic foundational investment in Portland State University, a world-class university, and the city of Portland and the region. And as we look at the underfunding of higher ed, this becomes a critical element of success for the university going forward and for our region. You know, 66% of the students that graduate from Portland State stay in this region to work. And with the increase in the number of students that will graduate,
having access and a quality education is going to be elementary in meeting our 40-40-20 goals. Along with that, under VIM's leadership, the term sustainability takes on a much wider range of outcomes. It's not just environmental or educational. As we all know, it touches urban planning, it touches the healthcare systems and the transportation systems in our region. And those partnerships, those collaborations, are really important for the future of this area. In addition to that, having chaired a number of capital campaigns, I can tell you personally that this kind of an investment leverages donors, private donors, to invest in this university. And every time that investment happens and we increase the investments, there's another thing that happens. Research dollars go up in coordination with that investment. We have seen that in capital campaigns that I've been involved with around the state, that we not only leverage ongoing annual giving, we actually increase research funds that come into the region, into the city. So this investment is foundational. It's critical to the success of Portland State University and our area. And if you really want to put an ROI on this, I would say that there are really three ROIs. The first is the improvement of student outcomes. The second is the preparation of a better workforce. And the third is we will decrease our social costs in the area. Thank you.
And Mr. Thrash, as you're talking, I was reminded of a statistic, and maybe I'll ask the president, is that in Oregon, only one out of every 25 eighth graders, so one out of 25 Oregon eighth graders graduate from an Oregon college or university, four-year college or university. This is not just Portland State, but the entire system. One out of 25 eighth graders, Oregon eighth graders, graduate from a higher four-year higher education institution on time. Do you think that that's particularly competitive when compared to the other states in the United States?
Well, it's not competitive, but the investment you're talking about making by increasing donor funds coming into the university because they believe in what the investment is doing will actually increase scholarship gifts, which increases the completion rate, which means that number can be moved.
Thank you. Thank you all very much for testifying. Appreciate it. Next four.
Are Shelley Lorenzen, Lainey Block-Wilker, Erica Aslan, and Ann Trudeau.
Welcome back. Ms. Lorenzen, do you want to go first?
Yes. I'm Shelley Lorenzen from the League of Women Voters of Portland. The League has three basic messages for council. First, to consider whether urban renewal really is legally the right financing tool for the district. And if yes, take the time to comply with the law. And third, to carefully consider the costs and impacts of this proposal. Because at the end of the day, as others have said, the council has to rob Peter to pay Paul to make this district happen. I really wonder if council as individuals has read the urban renewal statute. And if you haven't, if it's been a while, I urge you to do it again. And I also ask that you make a really, truly good faith determination based on the language of the statute that the district meets the blight test set forth in ORS 457. In short, can you honestly say that this district exhibits a growing or total lack of economic development and merits the excessive and disproportionate expenditure, I'm quoting from the statute, of public funds? Furthermore, ORS 457 requires that the plan include a description, cost, funding source, and completion date for each project. The current draft of the plan does not. You said you spent 3 years on this project. What's the rush now? A very inadequate document came out a month ago, and it needs to be complete. I think I don't know Steve Novick, but I think his comments and questions were right on the mark. I think it's important to appreciate the impact that your decision will have and has had on schools, county, and general fund. In 1998, there were 56 urban renewal plans statewide, which diverted $101 million in property taxes from city, county, and school coffers each year.
By 2011, the number of urban renewal plans increased to 106 plan areas, and taxes diverted from schools, county, and county and city services grew to $210 million a year. That's an increase of over 100% since 1998. And much of this increase is due to the city of Portland's aggressive use of urban renewal. Perhaps more than any other city or county in Oregon, Portland has aggressively adopted urban renewal plans to further the city's economic development. Their urban renewal taxes imposed within Portland now are about $110 million a year, over 50% of all urban renewal taxes in the state of Oregon. Time is running. The natives are getting restless, council members. I think the use and abuse of urban renewal is starting to take its toll. Clackamas County has voted to require voters to approve urban renewal districts. California has abandoned urban renewal. And I think you really need to be careful as you proceed with urban renewal districts so that you don't undermine this really valuable financing tool.
Thank you very much. Hi, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. My name's Lainey Block-Wilker. I'm an attorney, a parent, and an education advocate. I was a founder of the Grassroots Pro Schools Coalition, Learn Now, Build Later, and also Smart Schools PDX. We're advocating for a smarter PPS facilities bond that's linked to an educational plan and job creation. My two daughters attend Laurelhurst School, which has actually the worst facilities condition index in PPS, to your question. At 83%, it is rated twice as bad as Lincoln and is highly likely to collapse. We also lack a science lab, technology instruction, and other core curriculum, including advanced algebra and geometry. At our neighborhood Grant High School, there are thousands of high school students that are warehoused in involuntary study halls for up to 3 hours, unable to get math or science classes to prepare them for careers in a knowledge economy. The other 84 schools across Portland Public are in awful condition. They have suffered devastating cuts to classroom education. You are on the brink of destroying decent public education in Portland. It will drive middle-class families and businesses seeking a skilled workforce from the city. If another urban renewal district is created, we will lose more tax base from schools and social services that are already critically underfunded. Treasurer Ted Wheeler understood this, and he understood the way it's devastated funding to social services and took a strong stand. I'm also a former deputy district attorney, and I've prosecuted domestic violence and worked with mental health and addiction, so I understand the nexus between social services and education. I'm asking you to please slow down so we can weigh the costs and benefits before locking in a bad decision that will hurt public education across the city. Mayoral candidates have stated they want to revisit urban renewal and help pass a better bond. While you're hungry for construction jobs, kids are coming to school hungry and without health insurance. And if we want construction jobs across the city, the Smart Schools PDX has put forth a strategic plan that's actually linked to an educational plan for rebuilding the unsafe infrastructure across the city. And linking it to target job creation clusters. So kids have technology, and they have science, and they have algebra, and they have geometry, and they have world languages. Lincoln should be part of a larger strategic plan to improve education across the city. If I could leave this with your assistant.
The clerk will get it to us. Yep.
But this is a plan for 6 robust high schools and reinvigorating Benson's successful VOTech program with software, advanced manufacturing, clean tech, that where we're trying to build. It would serve the whole city. It's not a limited West Side project, so I hope you'll consider that. And also, I think we can all appreciate the importance of research incubator, but I would like to echo Mr. Novick's comments that there's got to be a better way to pay for it that doesn't gut K-12.
How much is your bond measure, facilities bond measure?
The bond measure that failed was...
No, I know that. How much is your proposed facility bond measure?
This is just a proposal in terms of priorities and how we can get...
How much does that cost?
We have not done a cost on it, but what it does...
Thank
is
you.
It,
no, I understand. Okay. I just want another cost.
Thank you.
Hi, welcome.
Hi, my name is Ann Trudeau. Like many people in Portland, I have lots of questions about the Oregon Sustainability Center and the Urban Renewal Education District. in particular, nobody's been talking about the Oregon Sustainability Center here, and I have some of my questions will address that.
It's not in this district.
It's not in this district anymore?
And it's also, never been in this district,
and
proposed
the council
district.
Has already, by resolution, determined that urban renewal money, if indeed that building goes forward, it would not receive urban renewal money. So
From this district. Yeah.
From this district. So whoever put that on the Onward Oregon website and asked people to petition us on that question had not followed either the contours of this district or the decision we've previously made.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And I got dozens of emails from people were misled.
It's not even on the map.
Specific point, which
I have some other. Can I start over?
Absolutely.
Great. Start me over. I got some other questions.
We didn't want you to waste your time.
I know. Okay. Why does this project use urban renewal funds in an area that is not blighted? If the definition of blight is a building built before 1978 with lead and or asbestos, the entire city would qualify. Is this blight or an opportunity for a tax break? Where is the economic impact study for this project? How will massive tax breaks that extend over decades and the infusion of public money benefit our community, especially the most vulnerable in our city? As detailed in the League of Women Voters statement, urban renewal tax breaks have a devastating effect on funding for basic services and education. Does this project really benefit education? How will it affect our city budgets for social service, parks, and maintenance? Isn't education best funded by paying teachers? A great university, to me, is based on great instructors, not hot buildings. We need fair taxes to fund universities and fair taxes on corporations. There's a requirement for affordable housing in any urban renewal project. Will the affordable housing money go to people who are low income, or will it go to student housing and so-called workforce housing? I thought the Housing Bureau was not going to put money into workforce housing after we saw that the Headwaters development did not serve low-income people, even though it was a legal requirement and it was supposed to be serving low-income people. It was as you recall, that was a workforce housing development. With the serious and increasing number facing homelessness in this city, should we be focusing on housing for people who make well over the poverty line, or should we have priority housing for those who are the most vulnerable? Okay, now about jobs. I fully support family wage union jobs. I support job preservation and creation, as well as a visionary, truly sustainable city. How about this vision? We need to be building and maintaining truly green projects. A jobs program financed by fair taxes paid by corporations. This could build and maintain affordable housing for all, a clean river, an expanded rail system. We need job preservation. We need to fully fund the workers who make our city livable, the people who work at our parks, the people who provide transportation, basic services like healthcare and schools. Please look at this proposal before you very closely. Ask yourselves, do these projects truly benefit the people of our city? And then do the right thing. Vote no.
And let me respond to one other thing, if I could, because and you're free to respond. I voted against, as you know, the Sustainability Center. Commissioner Saltzman brought forth the resolution that we would not put urban renewal money into that building. So fair point on your part.
Okay. From this district.
From this district. Now, second, because you've raised the question of the housing dollars, and it links up with what Steve Novick has raised, I wish there was a way through the general fund to generate the money we need to address housing. In a perfect world, we would have that. Mm-hmm. And Steve and I had this conversation the other day because he said, why do we take 30% of urban renewal districts and put it into housing and then such a small percentage of our general fund? We could spend all afternoon describing how we got in this predicament, but it has a lot to do with the other priorities that we have to fund, like public safety and other needs of the city. But I want to just be very clear on the point you raised, because, again, I've seen emails from people raising the same question. I regret that people actively mislead others about what's before us. As the housing commissioner for the city of Portland, who is in charge of enforcing the 30% set aside, if this passes, the 30% set aside attaches. I asked Debbie Iona the other day when she raised this question for the League of Women Voters, identify for me a single dollar that Margaret Van Vliet or Tracy Manning have spent outside of the 30% set aside since I was elected. She said, Nick, I have no problem with you. It's if you drop dead someday and someone else is in your chair. Fair enough. That's why it specifically says in this in what's before us that the 30% set aside for housing affirmed by this council last year applies. We have very specific guidelines, as you know, because you've been a strong supporter, about income limits and the kind of housing. And I'd be happy to talk to you offline about how we intend to spend it. But I will tell you, one of the things that's important to me at a time when the vulnerable people you're talking about, I can't serve because of federal cutbacks, state cutbacks, and a growing need, is that the $46 million we may generate through this urban renewal district could go into keeping older adults who are disabled in their homes, could help me address homelessness, and could help me allow, for example, low-income families who, by the way, may choose to go to PSU, have a place to live. That's not student housing. That's housing that a low-income student might be eligible for. And in a perfect world, we'd have the general fund dollars to do this. I wouldn't have to rely on either limited tax abatements or urban renewal. I get that. But this very specifically says the 30% set aside applies. I have a very clear record over the last 4 years. I wasn't here when the Headwaters was conceived of or built. And if I sold the Headwaters today, the public would take a bath because there's a penalty clause. So I have to let another 2 years go by until we have that discussion. But if there's any question about this money and our intent, it is, I think, resolved by the fact that it says very clearly in the plan the 30% set aside applies.
Why at the meeting at PSU about this was workforce housing brought up then?
By whom?
By the principal of Lincoln High School.
So the principal of Lincoln High School is not the Portland City Council.
Well, that was our $10 million that goes to helping the school district plan their new campus. Part of what they're looking at is the opportunity to help redevelop or redesign their campus, and it's just an idea they've put on the table, is that they do it in a way that helps pay for the school itself. The new if there is a new facility at that site, to help pay for itself through an entrepreneurial approach. So they put that on the table as an idea to explore. Will it work? Will it not work?
How about putting low-income housing in the city, in Lincoln High
School?
That's
what Commissioner... That's what Commissioner...
I'm saying we're... You know,
well, let me finish. Okay. I let you talk.
Okay, sorry.
You know, what Commissioner Fish just told you is, and it's one of the most stringent set-asides around... He just told you that the 30% set aside, the rules apply to this district, the university district. There is not a lot of affordable housing there is in this part of town. And as a product of a single mom with four kids that was going after a high school and college diploma, I want more affordable housing for students, especially students with kids. But that's for future decision makers to figure out. So I actually think we're on more of the same page here in terms of what the laws in the future are and what our legislative intent is than you might think at first blush or second blush.
I have a clarifying question. Is the Lincoln High School site identified as a potential site for affordable housing?
It's not currently, and we have proximate to Lincoln High School, there's some buildings that my team is trying to preserve that has historically part of our preservation campaign. I think Ann, you raised good questions, and every time we talk urban renewal, we should put them on the table. So, and I applaud you. I applaud League of Women Voters for being stalwart, and as a result, we've been pretty rigorous in using these dollars for a specific purpose. But at least as to that question, we have tremendous need in this district, particularly among older adults, people who are disabled, low income families. This $46 million is money I wish I could spend through the general fund directly. I don't have it, but this will allow us to do some legacy projects in this district. And I invite you to be part of that planning process as we go forward. And I invite you to look at our 4-year track record of how we've spent TIF for affordable housing.
To further clarify, if there was workforce housing, that would not qualify as part of the 30% set aside.
It's not currently allowed under the 30% set aside precisely because of the income guidelines we use. I have not invested in workforce housing as your commissioner, and you know,
but that's my concern. I mean, you haven't done it, but in the past, what has happened is that there's
Ms.
been
Trudeau,
urban renewal.
Ms.
Urban...
Trudeau,
go ahead.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Are you done? I need to move this on.
At one final point of clarification is that my understanding is that federal guidelines mean that we cannot use the set aside for student housing. So that in the situation that Commissioner Fish envisioned with a family, it would be as
we can do mixed income, mixed funded housing.
Mixed income, mixed funded housing. There are, I think you're raising some very good questions and some more clarification.
But dig into the facts, ma'am, because you'll find that the concerns you have, both in terms of since we established the 30% set aside, since I've been on the city council, mm-hmm. predates my colleagues here. We've done pretty darn near close from what I understand your position to be. So I appreciate the concerns. It's good to get the legislative intent out here today. I actually think we've followed through. Hi, you've been very patient. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and Council. My name is Erica Askin. I'm a staff member of Laborers Local 483, which is the union of city workers who do transportation maintenance, parks maintenance, recreation, among other things. We've been working long and hard to get to a responsible budget for the city of Portland together. And specifically, it's maintenance of transportation infrastructure and parks. Thank you for your commitment to these services, Council. I think you've really shown an understanding of the need for maintenance in the city. The staff of Local 483 is here today to reflect what we hear from the community as their concerns regarding urban renewals and to have some questions answered about the feasibility of using TIF financing when we're fiercely attempting to protect our tax base for services that our city and our locals' members are obligated to provide, maintenance of Portland, the slow, dignified work that keeps the city moving. So I'll be reporting back to our executive board with answers to some of our questions so that our union can take a position regarding TIF financing. It's our understanding that any increase in property taxes within an urban renewal area won't be realized by the city until years down the line, if they even get out of debt service. And as a sister local to laborers' unions in the building trades, we support responsibly financed capital projects within the city. For instance, as council knows, much of our needed repair to existing infrastructure is considered to be capital improvements. Local 483 has also pledged to work with you in the community toward the end of delivering more revenues for vital city services. And our criteria for any legislative and city reform is that it, A, helps working people, and B, is responsible. And people have already mentioned the money that has been diverted out of the Portland tax base. More than $34 million from Portland last year and $28.9 million from schools. And we're asking ourselves whether the budget cuts and layoff scare that just threatened our members and our city could have been avoided by not using TIF financing. We believe that the city's tax base should be used to finance the backlog of maintenance and capital improvements to the city of Portland's existing infrastructure. So the bottom line for our members is, does tax increment financing meet that goal? And also, what is the funding plan for maintenance of the areas within the urban renewal areas?
Erica, can I just ask you a follow-up question? Is it are you also, in your testimony, asking us to consider investments in park and street infrastructure in this district as part of a allocation of funds?
I guess my question would be, is that possible?
Okay. Short answer is yes. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Next four.
Our Steve, I believe the last name is Manfin, Eric Fruits, Lewis Brennan, and Nancy Newell.
Welcome back to the City Council. Doctor, okay. You want to go first?
Well, my name wasn't first, but I can go.
Go ahead.
Well, sure. Thank you. I didn't want to go out of turn. You should have gotten this handout here. My name, Mayor Adams, thank you for having me here, City Commissioners. My name's Eric Fruits. I'm a local economist specializing in urban economics and real estate. I'm also one of the founders of the Learn Now, Build Later Grassroots Coalition, so I'm familiar with many aspects of local education issues. I'm also the chair of my neighborhood association, so I wear several hats. Even so, I still speak for myself on this issue. I'd like to begin by just saying I'm going to apologize in advance for being blunt with only limited time for informed public input. Again, informed public input. We simply do not have time for delicate speech. So I'll begin my analysis by saying that, you know, noting this education.
You're known for many things. Delicate speech is not one of them.
Well, thank you. I will take that as a compliment.
You should.
Okay, good. I'll tell that to my kids. They get to hear a lot of my indelicate speech. Can I restart the clock? No, I'm joking.
Yes, you can.
Oh, wow. Thank you. So I'll note that this education urban renewal area truly is unique. It's unique in the sense I've never seen an urban renewal area that's had so little urban renewal in it. The handout you'll see was put together from information that was provided by the Portland Development Commission. And what I did is I took that, it was the table that that Mr. Quinton didn't want to go over, but I kind of moved things around and turned it into a pie chart. And as you can see, almost half of the proposed spending in the area has absolutely nothing to do with improving property values. And improving property values is critical to urban renewal. Without the increase in property values, the burden of paying for the URA's bonds is ultimately going to fall on the city's general fund. If this district fails to generate enough tax revenues, the services in the city that the city are responsible for, those top priorities, streets, fire, so forth, those are going to suffer painful cuts. Moving on, almost 20% of the money can only be described as slush funding. And again, I hate to be indelicate, but I guess that's what I'm known for. This is all money that's just set aside to entice, expand, or accelerate unnamed and even unknown businesses at this time. Also potential entrepreneurs, again, who we don't know, who may not even be born yet because this district has a 20-year life. Again, this is money we have no idea who's going to get it, how it's going to be spent. It's a slush fund. Moving on, almost one-sixth of the money goes towards staffing and overhead at the Portland Development Commission. Remember that, again, this is money that's funneled from other vital services. This is money that we're going to sacrifice city services to expand the PDC bureaucracy, or at least maintain it. When you look at the prospective building projects, those are the things in the blue, you should be struck at how many of these potential projects will generate little or no tax revenues. Where's the tax increment to pay for this tax increment financing? And last, I know we spent a lot of time on this. I'd like to direct your attention to what I call the mystery earmark for the Portland Public Schools. It's mysterious in the amount that the amount of the earmark has dropped from $14.5 million to $10 million, with no explanation of what the original amount was for, what the new amount is for, or why it dropped almost a third in the space of a few weeks. No one has really gone on record to say what this money is for, and it really highlights the issues that the League of Women Voters brought up, that there really is no urban renewal plan here, that there's very few projects that have been identified. Again, no one has said what that money's for. We have some hints, though. Today, in the DJC, the Lincoln's principal said that PPS would like to surround Lincoln with apartments, rebuild Lincoln, provide covered parking for Jeldwin Field and Multnomah Athletic Club. Since then, the district, at least the people I've spoken with, have distanced themselves from her comments, not surprisingly. It is well known that Lincoln is one of the most affluent high schools in the district. Its students are housed in one of the best buildings in the Portland Public Schools portfolio. Crowded, but one of the best. The school's foundation auctions off student parking spots for $1,000 apiece.
So I need you to wrap up, sir.
I
gave you extra time.
I apologize. Again, I apologize for being blunt, but I urge you to certainly reconsider this urban renewal area and think about doing urban renewal in areas that really, really are crying for help. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Mayor, I have just one question, because Mr. Fruits earlier raised the question of the percentage of investments in a district that generate increment. And I think that's a fair question. And it is one of the criticisms against the 30% set aside, which is why some organizations have said we should not set aside 30%. Do you have an opinion on that?
Well, I think the set aside has a fairly long history. If I recall, it came from Commissioner Sten, who was concerned that a lot of urban renewal money was being used on things other than affordable housing. And so it was a council decision, at least from my understanding, that
it came from the Oregon Opportunity Network that and Sam Chase that sold the council and the mayor on it. But my question is, do you believe that to the extent 30% is set aside for housing that does not generate increment, that that is a valid investment or not? Or would you urge us to reconsider that?
I don't know if it's valid or not, but I think that what it does is it takes a lot of
Dr.
potential
Fritz.
Off the table for tax increment. And so you could get yourself backed into a corner financially with such a large set-aside.
Dr. Fritz, you are always unvarnished from what I can gather as a contributor to the Cascade Policy Institute and promoting right to work against
Is
the
that bond. A bad thing?
But you're always unvarnished. So
look that word up.
It surprises me that you said that this isn't the right place for tax increment. I'm left with the impression, and I just wanted to check in with you, that you wouldn't support tax increment anywhere in the city.
I don't think it's a good idea, but if you want to do it, you should do it somewhere wisely. I live near Hollywood, which is crying for help.
Oh, you would support a tax increment district in Hollywood?
I did not say that. I said I wouldn't support, but if you're going to do it somewhere
where
it's needed.
All right.
Mr. Fish should understand Hollywood.
No, you're saying you don't support tax increment. Fair enough. The League of Women Voters has never supported, since I've been around, tax increment. It's a principal disagreement. So I was just taking you at your word of being blunt. So, hi, welcome.
Hi. My name is Lewis Brennan. I'm a citizen of Portland. I had a small point to make about what I believe is a disconnect between this use of tax increment financing and the original intent of tax increment financing and a possible problematic model that I see being promulgated through this. My understanding, my point is that I'm not actually contesting any of the individual projects. I do believe that a great city needs a great university and that good union jobs in construction industries are perfectly valid and worth having. But my understanding of the original intent of tax increment is improving blighted sectors of our community. Right, and as a model that pays for itself, right? In a post-Measure 50 Oregon, that no longer necessarily makes sense, and in a place like PSU where it's not necessarily blight, where it's actually a well-developed neighborhood to start with, raises some questions. The PDC itself is projecting average 3.5% property value growth in this area over their projected 2.7% growth without tax increment. Which is to say that there's only a 0.7% gain in property increase using tax increment. So this no longer fits into the standard model for what a tax increment district looks like, where it pays for itself by the projects producing growth and property value. Instead, what it seems to me is a way to lock ourselves into a long-term earmarked plan for development, concerted development in single community, where we say we want to do these projects. And we want to designate city funds on the long term to do those projects. To me, in an age where we are facing great economic uncertainty and a large amount of rigidity in our budget, causing more rigidity and reducing the amount of flexibility we have in our budgeting decisions is a grave mistake. And so rather than contesting the individual projects or the individual nature of this plan, I believe that tax increment is not the right way to go merely because it handcuffs the city to do the great projects that it needs to get done.
Thank you. Mr. Manton, welcome back.
Mr. Mayor, members of the commission, Steve Manton. A bit of full disclosure, I have 2 degrees from Portland State, and my children went to Portland Public Schools. My daughter graduated from Lincoln. With that said, the thing that strikes me about this whole plan so far is that nobody's actually stated who's going to pay for this and how it's going to be paid for. Brief bit of history. You know, when they were going to do urban renewal back in the 50s, every taxing district had a tax base, and they all levied up to the maximum of that tax base every year. And they had a rate and a property value. And between those, they adjusted each year and so that they could get that full value. That was what they used to create with the urban renewal. They ran and they said, listen, we're going to have a district. And within that district, that tax increment financing will be used where the property owners in that district will pay for that urban renewal district. And then when it is defeased, everyone in the city will benefit because the increased value should push everybody else's rates down, thereby creating a lower property for each of the homeowners. And that's how they sold it to everybody. All well and good until Measure 5 comes along. Measure 5 freezes the tax rate. The tax rate now is a totally different thing. The tax base is not the determinant any longer. It's the tax rate. A few years later, we had Measure 47 that came through, which froze the value. And then, because it was a bad law, the legislature got involved and created Measure 50. When they did that, urban renewal advocates went into the legislature and said, listen, PDC and other urban renewal agencies are dying. They can't live with the way it is right now. So we want to change the way that we can fund these things. And what they did was they created what's known as division of taxes. And so the idea that it's tax increment financing is wrong these days. Yes, the tax increment is used to determine the collection of taxes everywhere, but they divide those taxes across all the tax bases and all the property owners in the city of Portland. So essentially what you're asking all the property owners in the city of Portland to do is pay for this urban renewal district that is coming up right now. That means that